background about what we're talking, we'll be talking, you may have a look in the paper, so you basically just need to look at the screen mostly, rather than to, and some of the examples will be repeated. So I think Mark will start first.
So this is the
The talk, because we doubted a little bit what to say, the talk consists of two parts. The first part is a more an in-depth analysis of gender and non-form classes in Bernayungu, with a little bit comparative data as well. And it corresponds very much to a paper that we gave in Kyoto at WOCAL, which we subsequently wrote up for the proceedings, and that's what we gave you. That's a big handout. But meanwhile, we have made some more progress, so there is some new things in here as well. And the second part is a more theoretical discussion, and that's only if there is time, and that's for the discussion on Friday afternoon or Saturday
morning. So we follow
morning.
The PowerPoint.
Yes, you follow the PowerPoint, but just if you want to look at an example again, you can use the... So the other handout, the smaller one, those are excerpts of a chapter that I wrote on the nominal morphology and the syntax of the noun phrase of the Bantu languages, because although Tom told us not to touch too much on Bantu, I am going to refer to Bantu a little bit in the second half if there is time. So just as an introduction, the approach we have always followed is very close to what Tom and Ines present in their position paper in the chapter. So we also always distinguish sets of nouns that trigger the same agreement pattern from sets of nouns that have the same class affix. We have normally used other terms though, and so there is still some terminological confusion. Agreement classes, we continue to call them noun classes, and because we think that the best definition of noun classes are actually agreement classes. That's what we used to do, and that's what how I interpreted Corbett. That was what I thought of his target genders. And then we have used the term morphological class for noun form class traditionally, so sets of nouns have the same class numbers. But I don't. We don't have a very strong preference. It's just a habit. And then there are some minor conceptual differences. We haven't really understood still the need for the concepts of gender as opposed to agreement classes and declensions as opposed to noun form classes. But we have used the term genders in a traditional way also before as class pairings, agreement class pairings. What I think is that, at least for the Bantu languages, but also for some other Benue-Congo languages and maybe further outside in Niger-Congo, that you actually don't need a feature number. In Bantu, if you write a grammar of a Bantu language, you don't need the feature number, and you can look at the classes, the agreement classes, and classes in derivational terms. So treat the difference between singular and plural in the same way as you treat the difference between diminutive and non-diminutive or augmentative, as far as I'm concerned. So I've never been convinced of the need to distinguish a feature number. And so that's why I don't think you need a term for sets of nouns like gender, but we can discuss it. And Dima will talk about Bernayungu first.
Okay. So then, and then Mark will continue with general discussion on the relation between noun form classes and agreement classes. So basically, in terms of two, you asked two questions: which scenarios can explain the typological differences between Niger-Congo gender systems, and which typological features are renovative versus conservative. Now, I'll proceed to the discussion of Bernayungu data, morphological noun-form classes and agreement classes. So just, this is a map of Nigeria, northeast of Nigeria, there is Bena, and so there's another map below where you have like a bit more, I'm not sure I can use this. But anyway, so there somewhere. So here, languages are spoken here. Just three or four, I mean, four closely related languages, rather closely related languages, which form the group Bena-Mboi. And we'll focus on Bena-Yungur languages. Bena-Yungur has beautifully symmetric system of three Grimmian classes that can be each triggered by either singular or plural noun. The rich morphological class system shows that its complexity can be reduced by subgrouping class markers into sets that consist of a basic marker and one or two markers diachronically derived from it by means of stacking. So this insight has consequences for the reconstruction of class markers. So first about agreement, Bena-Yungur agreement classes. So we have different agreement targets, demonstratives, indefinite determinants, possessive nouns, relative clause markers, some adjectives. We have three agreement patterns, wa, ya, and ba. So we use the forms of the demonstrative, modifying demonstrative, to refer to these agreement patterns. Pronominal agreement targets agree in animacy, not in gender, with their controller. And so animacy is basically, in Bena-Yungur, can be defined as the self-locomotion ability of the reference, so everything that moves is animate. So a dead chicken is not animate, live chicken is animate. Car is animate, or his bike is kind of problematic because they move on itself. Then inanimate pronominal targets are mostly realized as absence of an overt pronominal. So basically, animate pronominals are overt, whereas inanimate pronominals are usually just zero.
What do you mean with pronominal agreement?
Just pronominal, personal indexes.
Everything outside of the noun phrase. Basically.
Everything outside of the noun phrase, like anaphoric or agreement, things like that. So here are examples of the agreement on agreement targets. In one, you have demonstrative, so this chicken has three patterns, wa, ya, and ba. In two, you have possessive pronominals, my chicken, my sugar cane, my tree. So wa, ya, ba again. Then we have forms that can be described as adjectives, so where the agreement is by the final vowel, or A and A, and then you have an indefinite determiner, a certain, so which the stem is K, K, and then we have the vowel, or A and A. So when we compare it with plural controllers, so we have these owls, these palm trees, these children, so we see we find exactly the same three agreement patterns as in the singular. So a situation that is not attested in any other language that we are aware of. So maybe we don't know, maybe there are some languages but we haven't heard of them which do exactly the same thing. So there are eight or maybe nine noun class pairings. I will get back to the ninth possible class pairing in a second. So, or controller genders in Bena-Yungur. So in our paper in that you received, so there are only eight to this last line, so that we added now. So exactly the same agreement patterns we see are used in the single with single and plural controllers, typologically unusual symmetry and simplicity. So the only pairing lacking or marginally possible is the last one, ba-ba. So probably this is accidental, so because the agreement pattern ba is rare both in singular and in plural. And so it may be marginally possible because there is one noun anda or ada place, which is usually has the agreement pattern ba wa, but it can also be ba ba optionally. So it's I don't know how whether we haven't tested it with several speakers, so we don't know whether how acceptable that is. So now we pass to morphological classes. Bena-Yungur has about 30 morphological classes, that is sets of nouns that have the same number marking. Most class markers are postposed, but some plural class markers are preposed or circumposed. Actually, some singular as well can be circumposed, so that's a small correction. These morphological class markers are not a homogeneous group in terms of their degree of morphological bondings. Some are clear affixes, some are more like clitics and separate words, but conventionally we represent them all as affixes. I mean, almost all of them, we represent them as affixes here. So their tone is partly or fully lexically determined, and so this is the system of these morphological classes. So we divided in three columns. So the first column, according to the type of coding, so singular versus plural. So in the first column we have the singular is overtly coded, the plural is overtly coded as well. In the second column we have cases where you have pairings where you have no overt coding in the singular, but some overt coding in the plural. And in the last table we have cases where there is no overt coding in the singular nor in the plural. So there are two cases, singular is plural, is the same as plural, or there is no plural. So we'll come back to this a bit later. So this table is not fully exhaustive, but these are all major classes are represented. So there are some other minor options. And the pairings that are between brackets, they contain less than three nouns in our current lexical database. So there are some which are quite common, there are others which are much less common. So we take a strictly synchronic approach, recognizing a class marker only when it commutes with another one. So here are some examples. In 6 and 7, for instance, we have final R and O in the singular, which commute with A and Sa respectively in the plural. So that we analyze, and because of that, we analyze them as morphological class markers. Whereas in 8 and 9, so these final vowels, they do not commute in the plural form, so and synchronically we don't analyze them. We analyze them as part of the stem. So consequently, we also do not analyze the final ma in the mass nouns in 10, such as salt, paste, milk, blood, urine, and chaff, etc., as a class marker, although there is no doubt that it is the reflex of one from a nitrochromic perspective. And actually, in some other Benambui languages, sort of close-rate languages such as La Aroba, nouns ending in ma, they do trigger a specific agreement pattern using a demonstrative ma. And if we look in the Benayungur itself, we also find some traces of ma agreement in Benayungur. So, for instance, with the selective agreeing modifier Bema hot and Songma cold with the word with only one word water. So we can get this agreement. So we have a difference between Mbran Song Songwa, cold water, and Mbran Songma, the water that is cold. It's kind of selective reading. So when they have several types of waters present around. There are also some traces of the origin of the Ma class marker from a demonstrative of the Ma agreement pattern in Benayungur. For instance, we have the word for blood, which is mutma, and it has either a dialectal variant for some varieties, or in our reference dialect, a special possessive form of mutma. So here, in the first example, mutme kotso, it's just the blood is the head noun and non-possessed, so it's modified by a like kind of participle, so blood that coagulated, and you have the regular form, whereas if you have the blood of a person, you would use this possessive form munmi ete, so you have this change. And which suggests an earlier form mund with a vowel, final vowel, which we cannot determine based on Benayungur data, so mund or munda or muda, that was frequently modified by ma with either the regular change and d to d between vowels, giving mutma, or the regular construct form final vowel lesion and NDC cluster simplification. Giving NC with 2 and C giving Munma. So these are all regular phonological processes synchronically in Benasa. This is not something very you have to argue a lot about. More than 30% of nouns have no number marking, and so some have no plural, for instance mask nouns, but some nouns the singular is the same as plural, so it's more situation like in English, deer or something like that, so fish, so we can have one fish, two fish, three fish, and so we can count that, whereas mass nouns are uncount. So there are forms in 11, so these are examples of such forms, and also you can also see them with verbs, plurectional verbs, some we have also plurectional verbs in Benayungur, for instance, toda se take a bean, or a quantity of beans, is a singulative verb. Whereas you have ha is take directional, which means take several individual beans. And so you see there that here dase is not a mass noun, but it can be quantified. So you have It's just single is the same as plural. The same, and it behaves the same way as the word dwalo, which means a ritual whip. So you can have, we use it with a plurational verb. For many nouns that lack a class marker in the singular, our fluent native speakers consultants say they don't know, have never heard the plural, which is surprising since they're a kind of default plural marker, yo, which often shows up in borrowings. So, and this is very troubling, I mean, when you do fieldwork and when you work with consultants and you find this variation and people doubt on the, and it's kind of strange because the speakers, they're proficient, so it's not that they like remember us or whatever, so there is something there. And So besides singular versus plural number distinctions, some nouns, mostly mouse nouns, additionally distinguish a third category, distributive plural, so marked by the suffix mse, and which triggers a Gregorian pattern ya. Yeah. So, and it's all very lexically conditioned, so there's some nouns, like for instance beer, you have balo, beer, you have a morphological plural form, balsa, which means several containers with beer, and you have this kind of distributive form, balimse, which means different types of beer, for instance, filtered milled beer, unfiltered milled beer, Western style beer, etc. Whereas with other nouns, for instance, like kama, seed, or seeds, you can have only distributive form kamimse, which mean either different types or different containers of seeds. And so here is also an example of a noun which is not really a mouse noun, container used to measure things. We can have a plural with this pre-post marker, default plural marker, measure containers of when they are of the same type. And if you have different types, you can have these distributive plural. So it's very kind of lexically conditioned, and we also suspect there is some variation between speakers and what exactly the meanings of these distributive forms are, as opposed, for instance, to plural forms when there are such separate plural forms. Okay. So this figure two, it summarizes morphological class markers of nouns marked in the singular and plural, and noun class pairs. So this shows data from table one. So in the way that is usually used in Niger Congo and publication of Niger Congo languages. So full lines represent common single plural pairings, whereas the lines that are less thick, they represent less common lines. So we should also note that the number of morphological class markers in the plural is twice as high as in the singular, which is typologically rather unusual but perfectly explainable. And we've already seen there, I mean, it's not the only language, there are also other languages which have that, so we've seen this today. It's explainable from the, there is logic behind that. So. But when you look at the system, so this system, it may, may lead comparativists to a seemingly natural hypothesis that the morphological class system is the reflex of a rich noun class system in a proto stage of the language, and the breakdown of which is more advanced in the agreement patterns than in the nominal class markers. We believe that this hypothesis is most likely to be wrong. So the system is not, the earlier system was not as complex as this one. So there is some internal evidence for that, so that we'll discuss now. So the system of, if we ignore the markers rein ta and the words for place and things, so all nouns, the system can be reduced, its complexity can be reduced and brought more into line with the symmetric and simpler symmetrical system of agreement patterns. So for instance, what we can note is that all nouns that end in the singular end in a, in the plural they end in e, and all nouns that end in e in the singular or in the singular, they end in a in the plural. So, which basically we can reduce this figure two that we have, this very complex one, to a very simple system of morphological class markers. We have these, which looks much more similar to the system of agreement assignments. So, and we believe that these other additional markers like same, say, or and so on and sa, they are combinations of different stacked markers. So here, this is what I just said. So say is probably a combination of the stacked M, S, and A. So we don't know what the vowels were, but just now we only see all these M and S that went with them. But so then my is probably M with A, M, may is M with A, and so on. So there are some, we could choose as we can compare these to some clear evidence of synchronic stacking in plural marking, for instance, in 18. So we have the word for tick is hora, and we have a plural, so we have hontisa. So we have two markers. So the first is one of the kind of regular plural noun class plural marker of rata, pairing, and we had another one, sa. So then in 19 and 21, we have denominal derivations, so we have stacking in denominal derivations of blind persons, we have and ta, and then in the blindnesses, you have two markers stacked, and the same for baobab fruits, we also have two markers stacked, and the same for kumla tree fruits, so we don't know the name in English, which is stacked as well. So the many nouns that end in a non-compounding O and A in the singular are also likely to have historically stacked suffixes, singular plus plural, in their plural form as well. So these are examples that we have already seen earlier, these walking sticks and seed. And interestingly, so in phrasal compounds, commuting and non-commuting final vowels tend to be replaced by a vowel corresponding to the agreement pattern of the head noun, so which also kind of provides an evidence for the possibility of these stacking. So, slimy food, which is the head of the compound, and then baobab, which ends in A normally, but when you have this phrasal compound, baobab leaf soup, so you will get the final vowel O, which corresponds to the agreement pattern wa of the head noun. So here's another example with the word child, away, and pima, sheep, so where the final vowel a is non-commuting, unlike in bata, baoba, and so, but we have this phrasal compound lamb, where the final vowel a replaces the non-commuting a of sheep, in a kind of marking agreement with the head noun child. So here's a different example, so also with the non-commuting vowel a, which is replaced by a in the phrasal compound calabashes, and this a comes from the agreement pattern with the word with the head, original head, so children. So this stacking is also suggested by the strong correlation between the quality of the final vowel of the noun and its agreement pattern. So we'll get back to this later. And some of these stacked forms, such as this A, for instance, in forms consonant A, they're also likely to have been demonstrative stems and not class markers, so not in these stacked forms. So not all parts of these stacked forms are originally class markers there. Some of them are demonstrative stems. So there is evidence for that, for instance, when you look at the agreeing demonstratives, modifying demonstrative, you have the agreement marker, they can be easily analyzed as agreeing marker, which is the first consonant, and then we have the vowel, which is the proximal demonstrative stem. Historically, because we put it historically into brackets, because there are actually, when they use as modifiers, there is no difference between proximal and distal, so they're just used as a modifying demonstrative. But you do find certain contexts where there is a where they are used with the proximally. So here we are versus there we are. For example, the final A versus O. So, and in certain contexts, we also find cases where this demonstrative stem is dropped and only the agreement, so-called agreement marker, noun class marker, is left. So, for instance, we have an example like 26, I like watery porridge, so the modifier watery has to be modified by the demonstrative agreeing demonstrative, which agrees with the head, bura porridge, which belongs to the wa noun class, but if you would use it in the negative, so I don't like what's reported, then the demonstrative stem will be dropped and you'll get, you'll have only the agreeing element left. Now, okay, so only for minority nouns do we find some semantic irregularities in their assignment to morphological classes. The names of trees, for instance, have singular a and plural e with very few exceptions. So conversely, the pairing a, e of morphological classes is entirely indicated to names of trees. In our paper that you received, so there are, we mentioned there are two possible exceptions, a name for a legal person, so neighboring ethnic group, and a type of singer, so they're not actually exceptions, so they can be ignored, so they're not exceptions. So names of fruits are usually derived from the tree name by suffixing as ra in the singular and ta in the plural, and about 30% of the nouns that are used to refer to human beings have the suffix e in singular, and consequently a suffix that ends in a in plural, sometimes with a b prefix in plural and some other degrees of suppletion in the stem. So when we look comparatively, for instance, we have recently worked a little bit on two other related languages of the group, Lala and Lala Roba and Boy. And for instance, in Boy, the agreeing pattern ya it's generalized with human nouns. They take ya in the variety of Boy that our consultants speak, and whereas most animals are also ya, but not this kind of, we haven't checked that. So there's in these other varieties of the Benam Boy group, there was a kind of generalization of the semantic assignment, semantic regularity. So the nouns for animals with a marked plural form are mostly belong to three morphological class pairings, so osa, rata, and zero in the singular, sa in the plural. So now we'll pass from morphological classes to noun class or gender assignment. So the gender assignment of nouns is somewhat unstable, Benayoun has already mentioned, so with inter and intra-speaker variation, but gender agreement as such is clearly not on its way out of the language. So it's very stable, but there is variation in the exact assignment of different forms, different nouns. So agreement targets have to agree, and only some speakers generalize one agreement pattern to the detriment of the other. So there is some more discussion of that in the paper, so about how our different consultants generalize different agreement patterns. We can find certain irregularities with the noun class ba, with the assignment of nouns to the noun class ba. So for instance, all nouns that trigger ba agreement, whether in singular or plural, can alternatively trigger wa agreement, so this is kind of a general option. And phrasal compounds headed by the few nouns that belong to the ba class in singular, they have ba agreement within the compound, so with the modifier, but wa agreement outside of it. So we have the word moving that belongs to the ba class in singular, so then they have kind of a participle, if you wish, eaten before, and which would agree with the final vowel will be changed to a because it will agree with the head mu, but when you would say, for instance, this is food, you would use the y agreement. So the compound will take a different agreement pattern from the head, from its head. In plural, the ba class contains almost only nouns referring to humans, but as also found in other languages, so not all plural human nouns belong to this class, so belong to this ba class, which is probably a typical situation in Bantu, I think, and so in Niger Congo maybe as well. So that's, yeah. So assignment to the ba class in plural is clearly semantically motivated. Nevertheless, so for instance, we have these polysemous stems like kama, which means kama, which means seeds, and so with wa agreement will be seeds, and with ba it will mean these paternal concept with no relatives, so it will be humans, referring to humans. And the choice between agreement patterns, so something about generalization, that our speakers make. So the choice between agreement patterns, why, yeah, can usually be predicted on the basis of the last segment of the noun. So whether it synchronically has a suffix or not, so whether you can analyze this final segment as a suffix or not. So it is still largely predictable. So final ao or o strongly tend to be trigger y agreement, whereas words ending in e, e, u, and a consonant strongly tend to trigger ya class. So its tendency is very strong. So this suggests that historical noun class suffixes have been integrated in stems as morphological class markers. So these final vowels are actually historically are noun class suffixes that were integrated in the stems. But synchronically, they are morphological class markers. Then that's kind of a strange thing that we find in Benner Junger. So I'm not sure that I don't think we know of similar examples elsewhere. So yeah, we haven't checked the corporate agreement. So maybe he mentioned something similar. So something we would call functional non-agreement of targets. So in certain contexts with controllers of noun class wa, the agreeing demonstrative wa, which is the agreement target, may be replaced by a non-agreeing demonstrative ya to mark selectivity. So here is an example, sorry, one case like that. So with modifiers that require an agreeing demonstrative as a nominalizer, a non-agreeing ya indicates that the modifier is to be interpreted selectively or considered restrictively. So we've seen this example already with wa, so I like watery porridge, so which means actually, so I like watery porridge in general. So when you ask, yeah, what do you like to eat? So I like watery porridge. And so this willy willy, this modifier is actually an adverbial or predicate, so it needs to be nominalized to be used, to be able to be used as a nominal modifier by using this modifying agreeing demonstrative. So but if you change the agreeing demonstrative to ya, you get the selective reading. So I like the porridge that is watery. So when there are, for instance, different types of porridge available. So so different demonstrative is chosen, agreeing, I mean, it's not agreeing here, a different demonstrative of different agreement pattern is chosen for a certain functional purpose, to mark that it's selective. The modifier is to be interpreted selectively. So another example is that of a similar kind. So with plural nouns, so the various morphological classes of the noun class wa, such as, for instance, most nouns and belonging to the morphological class ta, the agreeing demonstrative wa points to the totality or an unspecified plural of the reference, while a non-agreeing demonstrative ya would select a restricted plural subset of the reference present in the situation, so which can translate in English often as a bunch of, a heap of, things like that. So here is an example. So I have these directional verb ha and bumtu, which is a construct form of bumta, bracelets. So this is the kind of the default phrase that you get, take these bracelets, either all of them or whichever several of them you like, so it doesn't matter, it's non-specified. But if you say, if you replace the agreeing demonstrative wa by non-agreeing demonstrative ya, you get the meaning, take these bracelets, this in meaning this bunch of bracelets when there are several bunches of them lying, like in the market you have several heaps or bunches of them, so you can say this bunch. So something similar semantically, but formally it's actually the reverse. So from the two preceding cases, so we have with mass noun nouns of class ya, the agreeing demonstrative ya selects a restricted quantity of the mass, so which is kind of singular, while a non-agreeing demonstrative wa points to a plural of the mass, either in terms of containers or types. So we can also recall the discussion on the distributive plural that we had before. So here is an example with the long word sugar. So you have, we say this sugar, sugar ya, but if you have this sugar in different containers, or kind of say these sugars of different types, you would use the demonstrative non-agreeing demonstrative wa. And so this is with a non-borrowed word, I mean at least non-apparently borrowed word for yeast. So this yeast is agreement ya, and then we have these, when you speak about different containers, you would use a non-agreeing demonstrative wa, which can be interpreted as a plural. And so but with bare yeast, we also have an option of distributive plural, which would mean different types of. And this situation is kind of reminiscent of the what we find with Bantu class 6 ma, which is also can be used in plural, but with mass nouns, liquids, it's kind of singular, so because we don't have plural. It's kind of similar situation. Okay. Benayunger has also strong... Okay, so then the final remark about Benayunger system is about one part of the system where the distinction between morphological classes and agreement patterns is particularly difficult to make. And it pertains to various instantiations of the tendency for having only one class marker per noun phrase. So Mark will talk about some of these things later in more detail. So, first, nouns tend to have reduced or no class marker when accompanied by a modifier, so which results in the emergence of construct forms of modified nouns. So here's an example of word ete, person. When modified by demonstrative, you get etia, this person. So then a slightly different example of word bimbra, tooth. You can have two options in this, what can be characterized as phrasal compound, so molar tooth, so cheek tooth. So either you can have one construct form where there's a reduced final vowel, a is reduced to schwa, bimbra, gualangra. Or you can just drop the noun class, the morphological class marker, ra completely, and you get bim gualangra, more tooth, so it's another variant. Again, so as already mentioned earlier, so in phrasal compounds, commuting and non-commuting final vowels tend to be replaced by a vowel corresponding to the agreement pattern of the head noun. So we've seen these examples already, but now we'll look at them from different perspectives. So there's only one gender marker in per noun phrase. So in the first example, it's the loro, the o of the slimy food is non-commuting, so it's not a suffix. So we have only one o at the end. Then in 23, we also in alchemy, lamb, you also have only one a at the end, which replaces the non-commuting final vowel of timashi. And 35 is also similar. So when you have word for eye, it's nu. And when you have eyeball, it's aune, so where the stem vowel u of the word for eye is replaced by this agreement vowel. So there's only one marker of the agreement of the gender in the noun phrase. Then another example that we also already mentioned, so phrasal compounds headed by the few nouns that belong to the ba class in singular have bi agreement with the compounds. But why agreement outside of it? So it's similar tendency. Okay, so I finish here, and so when Mark proceeds to
general discussion.
Do we still have how much time?
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Well, then you wouldn't have discussion.
No, I just need to know because I don't need to discuss everything. So this is more of an open discussion. Okay, just ask ourselves which scenarios can explain the typological differences between Niger-Congo gender systems, and which typological features are innovative versus conservative. And I agree with Tom and many others that Bantu is typologically unusual, but I think that this is one of the reasons that make it interesting to compare it to the other languages. I think that, as Tom has also mentioned in the morning, gender agreement on every potential agreement target on top of overt class marking on the noun is innovative, but I think it's more recent than what Tom suggested. I don't think it's something that came up in an early period in Niger-Congo. I'll discuss it a little bit more. So the more typical situation is the one that we see all over Gour, but also in non-narrow Bantu, Bantoid, and in many of the so-called Adamawa languages, is that you have only one class marker per noun phrase. Even if you have a genitive construction with two nouns with two different noun classes, then even then you would only have one class marker. So it's not only that the same marker is not represented twice, it's just one class marker per noun phrase in several languages. And I think a typological study of this would be interesting. It hasn't been done as far as I know of this type of situation. And I think that this reflects a classifier origin that we all suppose there to be for the Niger-Congo non-class systems. And numerals are usually exceptional, not for the reason that was discussed already, because when I say numerals are exceptional, I'm talking about the agreeing numerals, the lower numerals. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I claim is a case or is that in the Bantu languages, the exuberant, what is often called the alliterative agreement within the noun phrase is due to a cycle of renewal that I've recently called the Amai cycle, a nominal modifier apposition integration cycle. And I think that you see that Bantu languages and as far as I know, many of the languages called Atlantic, they have many more agreement classes than some of the languages, the Gur family and the Guang families, etc. And I think that the fact that they have this alliterative agreement is what protected those different agreement classes from collapsing or merging. So I will try to develop this, and then I think proper names lack the classifier in the beginning from the system, and this also explains many things. So a very famous example is from Agem, Jeff Good cites it also of the fact that you can only have one morphological class or one class marker. There is no strict distinction here between morphological class marker, so noun form class marker or agreement class marker. You can only have one per noun phrase, except when you have, I don't know whether this is visible, except with a numeral, typically a numeral adds one class marker in a noun phrase. So I guess that numerals in Bantu or in Niger-Congo originally, the agreeing ones, they must have been predicative and they must have been, they must have needed this kind of demonstrative in order to make them nominal modifiers. As Dima already said, when class marking goes, so you have a situation where you have a noun and an adnominal modifier. The noun loses its class marker when there is an adnominal modifier because you can only have one per noun phrase. Now, when due to erosion, attrition, the adnominal modifiers also lose their class marker, then you end up with what Denis has called construct forms of nouns, and Stefan Elders has discussed this a lot. Yeah. He called it état d'annexion, borrowing a term from Afro-Asiatic linguistics.
Yeah.
And so these start as construct forms of nouns, but in many of the Goa languages, they develop into simply non-final allomorphs. And these are interesting for comparative reasons, because in some languages they may be the last visible traces of noun classes. And so here is here is another example of Benayungur. I will go quickly through it because we just saw it. So here is one Adamawa language from the Yendan group called Wam or Kugama, where we have this situation that the construct forms of nouns show is the only thing that shows us that the language must have had a class system. So I'm going to use data from one of our PhD students, Laura Litvinova. So construct forms of the language appear whenever a noun has a possessive modifier, whether it's a nominal or a pronominal possessor. Laura, initially you looked at things the other way around. She said some nouns have extensions that are added in every situation except when they have a possessive modifier. So, but these are the forms that disappear in the construct form. And so most of the time it's just a floating mid-tone. But sometimes there is also some segmental material, usually with a mid-tone, except in one case. So some examples. The word for belly is bai, where this e with a mid-tone goes in constructions with a possessive modifier. And what is an intriguing detail in Wam is that several nouns that have a segmental extension they have three syntactically conditioned allomorphs. So they have a construct form without any extension, so to speak, which is ma, okay, and that is used with common noun possessors and some possessive pronouns. But they also have a construct form without the segmental part of the extension, but which has the tonal part of the extension. So it's a halfway construct form. And those are used when the possessor is a proper name. So that shows us that this E with a mid-tone also must have been a stacked form originally. And that the fact that the mid-tone still appears with the proper name must mean that at some point this was a remnant of a class marker that could stay with a proper name modifier, because the proper name modifier didn't have a class marker, so you wouldn't have there wouldn't have been a problem with the one class marker per noun phrase rule if your possessive modifier is a proper name. I was very excited when I found this. So one example with the word leg, which is zei. So one leg is zei bini. So here you have a numeral modifier. So it's the full form of the noun that appears. Now if you say leg of the cow with a common noun modifier, you have zanaki with the construct form, the full construct form, so to speak, of the noun, so with nothing left. But when it's the leg of Lukwewa, and Lukwewa is a proper name, then you have this intermediate one where the segmental part of the X class marker has gone, but the tonal part remains. So that was one thing that I wanted to discuss. Then the other thing is what I've called the Amai cycle. So where does this alliterative agreement come from in the Bantu languages? I think that Chumburung example that Tom and Ines cited in their position paper shows where they come from. So you have these two old clothes. Typically, you don't have an agreement marker on the adjective, but you do have one on the numeral, as we often see. Now, but when an adjective is nominalized, then you have a class marker. So originally, these class markers, they were demonstrative forms used to nominalize ad nominal modifiers. And so in the Bantu languages, I think there was historically a tendency, and it still exists today, you can still see it, that there is a tendency to put to nominalize modifiers, to put those when you want to focus them, when you want to put them in focus, and then to postpose them to the noun phrase in apposition. And then to sequentially reintegrate these appositional nominal modifiers. And this is what gives rise to the alliterative concords, and this is what protects all the different agreement classes in Bantu, I think, from collapsing towards the more simple systems that we find elsewhere. It also accounts for the very weird word order patterns that you find in Bantu, and I don't know how. That's one of the other things that I would like to look at in a Niger-Congo perspective, whether you find a correlation between these exuberant agreement and strange word order patterns. And it also accounts for very many different types of prosodic breaks in a noun phrase. I'm running out of time, I guess.
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Yeah, just some more examples of this.
But then with our discussion, that's,
yeah.
You know, you see.
Yes,
yeah.
But we have half a day for discussion, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
we can
take up things. I mean, no problem.
Yes.
It's just if you want some questions right now.
Yes, because I also have a personal issue with the two of you. Yes. All right. That I would like to discuss. Let's just skip this. Okay, just one example from Bemba still, for instance, that shows this mechanism. So the original word order in Bemba must have been noun, adjective, numeral. And but you can also have a different word or a noun, numeral, adjective, but then you have a so-called augment obligatorily on the adjective, and the augment is nothing else than an original demonstrative, and so just a new agreement marker that is created. And my favorite example comes from Tunen, the only Bantu language with an SOV word order, where you can have this extra position of a nominalized modifier, and where it can end up in an object NP, where it can end up after the verb even. So I gave the big water calabash to the child with a focus on big, and big ends up in a you have a discontinuous noun phrase. Okay. One of the things that I found a little bit under-discussed in the position paper is the matter of semantic agreement. I think it's important because it's one of the mechanisms that could partly explain why agreements classes collapse, or why they are being reduced in number. But it's also, from a descriptive point of view, it can give a complication, because semantic agreement usually doesn't go all the way through all the agreement patterns, as is well known. So there is Corbett's agreement hierarchy. So that gives rise to many mixed patterns, and that makes the notion of agreement class a little bit more complicated. And I think that in Bantu, it's a phenomenon that is much more widespread than previously thought. I think there are very many more types of semantic agreement than simply the animate agreement that is well known. And in the excerpts of my chapter that I gave you, I point out five different types of semantic agreement, and I'm not going to go through them because we don't have time, but there are animate agreement, something that I've called superclassing, that is responsible, for instance, for agreement with conjoined noun phrases on the subject, which means that you don't need a number as a feature. Then my favorite, basic level term agreement, evaluative agreement, and locative agreement. And I will go very quickly through these. I'm sorry for that, but you can read it in the excerpts from the chapter. And just give one example of what I call basic level term agreement, because it will come up in 2 minutes before I end. So in a number of Eastern Bantu languages, such as Kirundi and Kikuyu, proper names and suppletive kinship terms, they trigger the same agreement pattern as the basic level term that expresses their categorical presuppositional meaning. And that's something I published about in an obscure journal. It was published in 2012, written in 2011, but officially it's 2009. So if you look at a proper name such as Black, Blackie, let's say, it can be used in Kirundi as a name for a dog, but also as a nickname of people, actually. It is used. So the word for black is a class 11 noun, Uhukara. To make it into a proper name, you drop the augment, all right? That's the case in very many Bantu languages. But then agreement, if you want to know which agreement it triggers, you need to know for which kind of entity it is a name. So if it's a name for a person, it will trigger a class 1 agreement, because the name for person is the noun for person is a class 1 noun. If it's a name for a dog, it will trigger class 9 agreement. If you would use it as a name for your house, it would trigger whatever agreement the word for house has. And I find this very exotic, and it works very well. It also works for kinship terms. So if his mother is sleeping, his mother will have a different type of agreement pattern if it's the mother of a cow than if it's the mother of a child. And it works for all kinds of names. So a river name, here obviously with an original class 6 prefix, it triggers agreement 11, because a noun for river is a class 11 noun. Okay. I'm not going to discuss this. Locative agreement. Okay, so the last remark from the position paper, I've already discussed it with Tom. That's about the zero marked noun form class. So I'm going to read from the paper. Later approaches to Bantu gender systems have introduced other conventions that may have enhanced philological comparability, but blur cross-linguistic transparency. Bantuists make an additional noun-class distinction of 1 versus 1A. The first class of each pair comprises human nouns with the expected prefix, and the latter contain prefixes, kinship terms, and proper names. This is descriptively adequate, but this class differentiation is irrelevant for the inventory of agreement classes. More importantly, it hides the necessity of taking into account an additional noun form class 0 that has no unique counterpart in the agreement system. And then there is footnote 7, which particularly hurts me. C. van der Velde, for an extensive recent discussion of such nouns in Eton and Bantu in general, we do not follow his proposal of considering them as genderless nouns, because gender is defined here by agreement, and their behavior in this respect clearly assigns them to the human gender. So I want to use this occasion to come back to the proposal that I made in 2006, which has been politely ignored by everybody. Probably people thought that, you know, I was still a student then, people thought that it was an attention-seeking proposal, a little bit weird, I admit. But I still think now, after 12 years, that I was right. I come back to the issue in the paper on Kirundi proper name. So, where I discuss this basic level term agreement. And so I wrote, there are two alternative analyses for the different behavior of proper names and common nouns in the Bantu languages in general, and Kirundi in particular. According to the first analysis, they have different principles of gender assignment. So you could say that common nouns have a formal gender assignment depending on their noun form class prefix, and proper names have a semantic gender agreement depending on their basic level term. So you could say that. That would be Tom and Ines' proposal. I mean, why not? Now, the second analysis, that's my original one. In the second analysis, the semantically motivated proper name agreement is a strategy for providing enforced agreement with a controller that does not have a gender specification. And then I say the first analysis is probably the most elegant solution for a synchronic grammatical description, but the second is, I think, much more insightful from a comparative perspective. Now, and this is why, I think that zero marked noun form classes are trivial. So there are very many examples that are due to the loss of a class marker. So in most Bantu languages, class 9 is zero marked because you can't separate this initial nasal. And in many languages, the initial nasal of class 9 went before a voiceless consonant. Right. The special thing about class 1A is, and that makes it, that sets it apart from all the other subclasses, is that it has never had any marking. I think everybody agrees on that. And there are very many indications for this. If you look at Ebe, for instance, after a verb, every object has downstep in Ebe, which I think is a reflex of a former gender prefix. But proper names don't. And which is, I think, a reflex of the absence of a prefix there. Very many indications. Now, in Eton, for instance, if you say, okay, proper names are assigned to the human gender, then that's problematic for two reasons. First, all proper names are assigned to the gender, also rivers, mountains, whatever. But the majority of common nouns for humans are not assigned to gender one. They're all over the gender system. Then gender assignment, which is in Eton, for instance, 0% predictable for common nouns, but 100% predictable for proper names. So that's also a very profound distinction between the two, I think. plural formation, class 2A, so-called class 2A, it's a plural word in Etonic, very many Bantu languages, whereas other in other classes it's derivational with another prefix. And then especially, very many different Bantu languages use different strategies for agreement with these class 1A nouns. And a language like Ohungu, for instance, uses agreement pattern of class 9 within the noun phrase and agreement pattern of class 1 outside of the noun phrase. So you have this very weird mixed pattern. And every time, every Bantu language that you look at, the agreement class that is used is always the same as the default agreement class when you have a very untypical controller. Right. So always using it as enforced agreement. So on this note, I wanted to end the presentation. Please leave my slide for a while.
Yes, I want to look at it. Yeah.
It's a pity because we should have. I would have liked to discuss.
I can imagine.
Actually, it should have been two talks because I would have liked to discuss concretely the Bena Lumbur stuff.
Okay, but
and
I
we
guess
we can't do that, and this is now. It's anyway, it's, we'll have time.